Katia versus McCasey, and for the appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Christopher Paolella on behalf of petitioner Linda Cadilla. Your Honor, this appeal is not about Mrs. Cadilla's credibility. The Board of Immigration Appeals did not rely on or even address the IJ's adverse credibility finding in affirming his decision, and this court need not address that adverse credibility finding in order to correct the error in the agency below. In fact, the Chenery Doctrine, which has been applied many times by this court in the asylum context, prohibits this court from affirming on the basis of a rationale that the final agency decision maker, here the BIA, itself declined to adopt. We would submit that what this case is about is an illogical and insupportable finding by the IJ, which was affirmed by the BIA, that Mrs. Cadilla hadn't shown government persecution on account of a protected ground where she was arrested by individuals identifying themselves as governmental anti-gang police, imprisoned for 18 days without a hearing, subjected to regular beatings, and ultimately accused of being a spy and a subversive, and subjected to a miscarriage-inducing rape by her captors.
The BIA didn't reject the credibility finding, did it?
I believe it did implicitly reject that finding.
But by accepting the determination on the lack of evidence of proof of persecution, aren't they implicitly accepting the credibility finding?
I don't think that's correct, Your Honor. If you look at the IJ's opinion, he had two alternative holdings, and that's the way he characterized it. The first was a generalized credibility finding, and the second, which again he phrased as an alternative holding, was a finding that even assuming that certain aspect of Mrs. Cadilla's story were true, that she had nevertheless failed to demonstrate that she had been subject to persecution on a protected statutory ground, here imputed political belief. And it seems like what the IJ believed was that Mrs. Cadilla's story, even if you accept her credibility, hadn't established that she was subjected to persecution by actual government anti-gang police, rather than individuals perhaps who may have been sent by her uncle who impersonated police and were acting basically motivated by this intra-tribal dispute between Mrs. Cadilla and her uncle. The problem with that holding is that unless you go in believing that Mrs. Cadilla is a liar, that is, that she has no credibility to begin with, there is no evidence in the record suggesting that that's the case, and there's nothing inherently implausible, about Mrs. Cadilla's version of events that could cause a judge to disbelieve it in the absence of some generalized finding of no credibility. And we would suggest that when the BIA made its decision, what it said was it cited the Bourbano case, which says that the BIA can adopt in whole or in part the reasoning of the IJ below, and it did the latter. It adopted that rationale that she had not met her burden of evidence. However, it then said we need not address the credibility question because we're deciding on the basis of this alternative holding. We would suggest that that decision is not supported by the evidence, the IJ's opinion or the BIA's affirmance of it. In order to establish a claim for asylum, Mrs. Cadilla must show two things. First of all, that she was persecuted by a governmental actor, and second of all, that that persecution was on the grounds of a protected statutory ground, and here the claim is that that ground was imputed political belief. Mrs. Cadilla has met the first prong. Her testimony is unequivocal and undisputed that the individuals who arrested her, detained her, and abused her identified themselves as governmental anti-gang police, and there's nothing in the record to contradict that characterization. And in fact, it's perfectly plausible, given the country reports in the record, which show that there are plainclothes anti-gang units, basically paramilitary police units, that operate as part of the Cameroonian gendarmerie, but outside the regular chains of command, who have been implicated in many serious and credible allegations of human rights abuses against political enemies of the Cameroonian regime.
Are these localized, or is this something countrywide?
They operate in various areas of the country. There are different units, but my understanding, and I believe that the way it's characterized in the record and in the other public reports that we cite in the brief, is that they don't report to the local police organizations. Rather, they report to a special individual who basically has a status as advisor to the president of Cameroon.
Why would she be targeted?
Why would she be targeted? It appears that she was targeted because someone told these authorities that she was a political subversive and a spy, that is, a political opponent of the ruling regime. And we will concede that it is possible, in fact, we think it's probably likely, that her uncle told these authorities that. And it's something that they may well have believed because she had been involved in an organization called the SCNC, the Southern Cameroon National Council, which is a peaceful secessionist organization representing some Anglophone Cameroonians. In fact, Mrs. Kadia's husband currently has the status of an asylee. He was granted asylum in the United States based on his past persecution because of his membership in that organization. So what may have happened is Mrs. Kadia's uncle, trying to get back at her and silence her for his own personal reasons, went to governmental authorities, accused her of subversion. They then persecuted her. And we would claim that that is enough to establish an asylum claim, because our claim is not for asylum based on persecution by her uncle, who may have been a private actor, but based on persecution by the Cameroonian authorities, based on what may have been a mistaken belief in her political opinions. And even a mistaken belief, this court has held, is sufficient to establish persecution on the basis of imputed political opinion. And I'd refer the court to the Jiang case, where this court held that where the Chinese authorities persecuted an individual based on the false belief that he was a Falun Gong member, even though he wasn't actually a member of that organization, that was enough to satisfy the criteria for asylum. So essentially, we believe that Mrs. Kadia, unless you go in assuming that she was not a credible witness, and that is something that the BIA expressly declined to address and therefore could not have been the basis for its decision, has established both prongs that she's required to establish status as an asylee. She has shown, and again, it's uncontradicted, and it's a plausible story that the individuals who persecuted her identified themselves and literally showed her a badge saying that they were Cameroonian anti-gang police. And second of all, that persecution was on the basis of a belief by those individuals, albeit a mistaken belief, that she was a political subversive and a spy. And that would constitute imputed political opinion under this court's case law. Now, there were a couple of areas that the IJ examined with a closer eye, not in connection with the general credibility of Mrs. Kadia, but in connection with the specifics of her story of persecution, that perhaps it found rendered those stories implausible, even apart from the issue of general credibility. However, on closer examination, we'd submit that none of them hold up to the standard of substantial evidence either. For example, the court mistakenly noted or mistakenly assumed that Mrs. Kadia had contradicted herself in describing the nature of her captors, that in one place she described them as special police officers and in another place as anti-gang police. In fact, the record shows, and Mrs. Kadia herself testified, that anti-gang police are a form of special plainclothes units within the Cameroonian gendarmerie. So there was no contradiction there. And finally, the IJ found that it was implausible that she herself would not have gone to government authorities to complain about the persecution she claims to have suffered. However, we'd submit that even if the Mrs. Kadia of early 2006, who is herself a provincial local police officer in good standing, might have felt comfortable going to authorities to complain, a year later the situation had changed very seriously. She herself had been arrested by individuals she assumed to be representing the government. They had abused her and imprisoned her without a hearing. They had beaten her and accused her of being a spy. She eventually escaped and lived in hiding. And at that point, it can't reasonably be believed that she would have felt comfortable going to the authorities to complain. Your Honor, if I have any time remaining, I'll reserve it for rebuttal.
Ms. Heller.
May it please the Court, Zoe Heller on behalf of the Attorney General. This case involves a citizen of Cameroon who alleges that she was detained by plainclothes men or police in 2006. However, an asylum officer, the immigration judge, and the Board of Appeals found her to be incredible. The record fully supports that finding, and Mrs. Kadia points to no evidence that compels this court to find her credible and overturn the board's decision.
But the BIA did not address the IJ's credibility findings.
In the board's decision, it said we need not address the adverse credibility finding. However, the The first line in that second paragraph says, we adopt and affirm the decision of the immigration judge with the following additions. It's well-settled law that when the board adopts and affirms with additions or supplements, the court is permitted to review the IJ's finding. The IJ is the fact finder in this situation, and in an over 20-page decision, did find Mrs. Kadia incredible based on the numerous inconsistencies in her testimony, not just one, not just two. Again, there were numerous inconsistencies, and given that this is a following the enactment of the Real ID Act, which permits the immigration judge and the agency to base an adverse credibility finding on any inconsistencies, or whether or not the relation in the testimony is plausible, and there is no presumption of credibility here. The board here did not say that it found Mrs. Kadia credible or that it assumed that she was credible. Even if it did, the board is not required. There's no regulation that sets forth how it has to lay out its decision. If there were multiple or alternative findings that the immigration judge relayed in its decision, the board need not address every single alternative finding. The Second Circuit Zheng case that counsel cites in his reply brief, if you actually pull the board's decision, there was no mention of adoption and affirmance. This is the key distinction here. When the board specifically adopts and affirms, and then it can also include additions or supplements, this court is entitled to then review the immigration judge's adverse credibility finding. And here, as I indicated, there were several inconsistencies. When Mrs. Kadia first arrived and it was found that her documents were not correct, she was interviewed by an officer. And when asked why she was here, she said that she was here to visit her husband, who she's married to in a traditional marriage, and to have her child, their child, who's a United States citizen, baptized. However, she even admitted to the immigration judge during her testimony that this was, in fact, not true, that she had lied. And then it was not until she was then expressed a fear of returning to her village, not her country, after speaking to her husband, who, as counsel indicated, was granted, who is an asylee in this country, that she then indicated a fear of returning to her village without relaying any specifics. She was then referred to for a credible fear interview, and during that interview is when she initially mentioned this alleged detention back in December of 2006.
Aren't airport interviews a little suspect to begin with? Person's just flown in, and in this case, isn't she diabetic and had some time period between when she had last eaten and in the initial interview?
Well, with regard to her medical condition, Your Honor, the immigration judge here did specifically request the testimony of the officer who interviewed her, Officer Hiller. And Officer Hiller did indicate that Mrs. Kadia was provided with food at any time, that she did, in fact, indicate in her notes in the record that Mrs. Kadia had expressed that she had a medical condition and asked whether or not she was, in fact, feeling okay and able to provide testimony. And again, I'm ad-libbing here, not quoting directly. And Mrs. Kadia responded that she had taken all her medications. And this is not a situation where she didn't speak English or could not understand the questions that were posed to her. In fact, Mrs. Kadia once served as an immigration official herself back in Cameroon. But then again, she did not express the most grave incident that she claims happened to her, again, by we don't know whether or not it was on people acting on behalf of her uncle based on a chieftaincy problem versus anti-gang or, she also uses the term, special police. There's also, apart from that inconsistency and her admittance that she, in fact, did not tell the truth in that situation, there's also the key issue is who in fact, if detained her, if this story is believed, and she does vary the terms and the conditions. In fact, she says in her asylum application that she was claiming asylum based on a exigency problem and that she was arrested and pled not guilty. And then later on, she uses the term political jail, that she was held in a political jail. And then during her final interview, she said that she was held in a building. And when asked whether or not the two unidentified men who came to, quote-unquote, arrest her were police, she said that they were. She could not identify them as police officers. And then again, she was taken, she claims, to a building. There's also, again, discrepancies in whether or not she escaped from the hospital where she was, in fact, taken for treatment as a result of the alleged assault that occurred during her detention. Again, in reviewing both the asylum application as well as, you know, her supplemental affidavit and the extensive testimony that was taken, there's a discrepancy. In her written application and in her affidavit, she says that her uncle had to bribe the security guard and that she, in fact, escaped. But then in her testimony, she says that, you know, there were no security guards and that she was able to leave. So, again, there was more than one, more than two, and, in fact, more than three inconsistencies in her testimony and contradictions between both not only the airport interview, the credible fear interview, her asylum application, the supplemental affidavit, as well as the 2 days of testimony that were taken here. Under the Real ID Act standards, which permits it's a much narrower standard which permits the immigration judge to rely on any inconsistencies in whether or not written, oral, taken under oath in making an adverse credibility and determination. So under the Real ID Act, there's clear evidence and substantial evidence that the immigration judge relied on in making his adverse credibility determination. To the other point, the Real ID Act also indicated that in establishing your eligibility for asylum, you have to establish, in this instance, that Mrs. Khadija's imputed political opinion was a central reason to her alleged persecution. And here, again, using this Real ID Act standard, Mrs. Khadija has not proven that her imputed political opinion, allegedly as a result of misinformation given about her actions in the United States.
When did her husband get asylum?
I believe he got asylum in 2001. I'd have to refer back, but because they were married in a traditional ceremony back in Cameroon, there is no way that she could actually get a derivative asylum under his claim. They're two separate claims. Her story, she did have an opportunity to speak to her husband, who was granted asylum, and I'm pretty sure it was before this occurred, before she was, in fact, detained at the airport in March of 2007, that she did relay that she had a fear of returning to her village, although she expressed that she would return nonetheless.
I was just wondering if there's some connection, why he would get asylum. Are the reasons similar or completely different, or do you know?
Right. Because they're two complete applications. Because there were a traditional marriage, she would not be eligible for derivative asylum, which is usually when...
Is there the same thing that got him out of there, it's the same thing affecting her, that's all.
No, and to the extent that counsel alleges that Mrs. Khadija was a member of, I believe, SDNC, this opposition group, that was never, her testimony does not support that was the reason that she was allegedly persecuted or detained. It's only mentioned briefly in her written application. So that is not the basis. There's no basis for that being the central reason for her persecution here.
The IJA didn't reach that, did he?
Her membership.
Right, or that what she claimed to be persecution was connected with imputed political beliefs.
With the immigration, not with respect to whether or not she was a member of this group, the SDNC, because that was not the basis. Again, she claimed that there was a chieftaincy problem and that her uncle allegedly had spread some, you know, misinformation about her. The immigration judge's alternative finding, which was affirmed by the board and adopted by the board, did state that what Mrs. Khadija did not provide evidence that these alleged persecutors were acting on behalf of a state actor, and that is key. Again, and that goes back to the inconsistencies in her testimony, that she could not affirmatively establish that these were people acting on behalf of the Cameroonian government. And again, the immigration judge also found that it was implausible that Mrs. Kadia, an officer in good standing, who actually had gone to the Cameroonian police after another family dispute or an incident that involved her, the death of her mother and father, obtained a prompt investigation
trial. Mother and brother, wasn't it?
It was the mother and brother, although, again, at one point she claimed during her credible fear interview that it was her mother and her cousin. But the incident that happened with the mother and brother, she did report this suspicious death, in her opinion, and there was a prompt investigation into that, and in fact a trial was held. So there, the immigration judge found it implausible, which the immigration judge is permitted to do under the Real ID Act in making a determination that she herself would not have reported this incident to her superiors or anybody else in the Southwest Province. And unless your honors have any other questions, again, there is no presumption of credibility here. Mrs. Kadia bore the burden of establishing her eligibility by presenting credible evidence, and she failed to do so. And for the foregoing reasons, as well as those stated in our briefs, we request that the court affirm the decision and deny the petition for review. Thank you.
How much time is left?
Mr. Paolella, your opponent up here a little longer. I'll give you 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me begin by saying that although we don't believe that the court needs to address the credibility question, if it does so, we don't believe that the credibility determination is sustained by substantial evidence as well. And on that point, let me talk about what I think are 3 misapprehensions of the record that we've heard, and they were misapprehended by the IJ as well in this case. First of all, in her very first airport interview, before Mrs. Kadia had an opportunity to speak to her husband or anyone else, she said, first, that she was afraid of her village, and second, that although she wanted to return to Cameroon, if she did so, she would have to hide. The airport interviewer failed to ask a single follow-up question about that expression of fear. And we would submit that because there were no questions that were designed to elicit the details of an asylum claim, as the standard this court applied in its cases, that her failure to simply volunteer the very traumatic and graphic details of her abuse and rape at the hands of government officials does not make Mrs. Kadia a liar when she wasn't even asked follow-up questions on the issue. Second, as to the claim that Mrs. Kadia testified that she could not identify the individuals who arrested her as police officers, that takes a single line of testimony out of context. What she said was she couldn't identify them because they were wearing plain clothes. But on the next page of transcript, she says that when they arrested her, they showed her a badge identifying themselves as police officers. So there was never any suggestion that Mrs. Kadia thought or testified that the individuals who arrested her and eventually persecuted her were anything other than Cameroonian anti-gang police officers. Finally, there's the claim that Mrs. Kadia contradicted herself as to whether she had to escape from the hospital where she was kept after being raped. The fact is, she admitted throughout her testimony and is consistent on this point that the individuals who had detained her previously did not watch over her at the hospital. However, she did hear one of them talking to a hospital security official and mentioning a death threat in French. The inference which the IJ refused to draw was that somebody was watching her, even if it wasn't the individuals who had detained her previously. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And this case will be taken under advisement.